Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. The Council on Criminal Justice recently hosted a webinar on public perceptions of police and protests against brutality and for accountability. On this edition of Prison Pipeline, we'll hear from Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Wesley Lowery, the Pew Research Center's John Gramlich, the Gallup Organization's Steve Crabtree, and the Council on Criminal Justice's Abby Walsh. But first, the U.S. House Committee on Oversight and Reform's Subcommittee on Civil Rights and Civil Liberties held a remote hearing recently titled Confronting Violent White Supremacy, Part 4, White Supremacy in Blue, the Infiltration of Local Police Departments. Here's the subcommittee chair, Representative Jamie Raskin, Democrat of Maryland.
Today, we'll examine how these different threats to the American people intersect, namely how white supremacist organizations, ideas, and attitudes have come to infiltrate and target certain domains of law enforcement. The bloody trail of violent white supremacy is now splattered across America. Charleston, South Carolina, where white supremacist Dylan Roof slaughtered 9 African-American parishioners at worship in the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church. Charlottesville, Virginia, where hundreds of neo-Nazi and Klansmen rioted and wounded dozens of people and killed Heather Heyer in a terrible attack by automobile. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where a neo-Nazi killed 11 people and wounded 6 at the Tree of Life Synagogue as they worshiped. Poway, California, another anti-Semitic rampage. El Paso, Texas, where a white supremacist hyped up on anti-immigrant hate killed 23 people and wounded 23 others in a rampage at a Walmart. According to the Anti-Defamation League, 75% of all extremist-related murders between 2009 and 2018 were committed by right-wing extremists. The Center for Strategic Studies, which analyzed over 900 politically motivated attacks in the U.S. since 1994, found that there have been nearly 6 times as many victims of violence from right-wing groups as from others. In 2020, they found that over 90% of political attacks were conducted by right-wing groups. These are the facts. Like COVID-19, this virus of violent white supremacy is spreading. The Southern Poverty Law Center documented a record 30% increase in the number of hate groups nationwide over the last several years, and hate crimes are also trending up. But as with COVID-19, the Trump administration has decided to mislead the public by downplaying the problem. The Department of Homeland Security whistleblower has stated that Ken Cuccinelli told him to specifically modify draft language on white supremacy to make, quote, the threat appear less severe and to include information on the prominence of violent left-wing groups. The spread of violent white supremacy is a threat to everyone, but disproportionately it is a threat to Black and Brown communities. But it is also a threat, and purposefully underestimating this problem is a threat to first responders, in this case, to police officers. According to the Anti-Defamation League, white supremacists and other far-right extremist groups have killed 51 police officers since 1990. 83% of shootouts between police and extremists involve right-wing extremists, with white supremacists being responsible for more than half of those. The unredacted memo we released today from the FBI states that, quote, white supremacist presence among law enforcement personnel is a concern due to the access they may have to restricted areas vulnerable to sabotage and to elected officials or protected persons that they could see as targets for violence. White supremacy is a deadly threat to the safety of law enforcement officers as well as to public safety generally. In May, far-right extremists killed David Patrick Underwood, a federal law enforcement officer. One of the Boogaloo boys charged in Underwood's death is a former Air Force sergeant, also suspected in the murder of a Santa Cruz sheriff earlier this year. In February, a white supremacist killed Officer Nico Rear in Alabama. In 2006, the FBI released an intelligence assessment warning of, quote, white supremacist infiltration of law enforcement. The FBI identified two distinct problems. First, the FBI noted the problem of white supremacist groups infiltrating law enforcement. We've seen a lot of evidence of that in the 14 years since the FBI's assessment, as officers across the country have been dismissed for active membership in the KKK and other similar groups. We will hear FBI also identified a second problem: law enforcement officers who have no formal affiliation with racist groups, but who sympathize with their racist ideology. This, too, has been in plain view in this period of resurgent racist violence across America. In 2019, a team of investigative journalists published the Plain View Project, which collected over 5,000 postings displaying white supremacist, xenophobic, misogynistic, and violent Facebook material from police officers in 8 different cities. We invited the FBI to come today. The Bureau refused to come, claiming it has nothing to say because they have no evidence that this is a widespread problem demanding the FBI's attention. What's more, they've attempted to disavow their own 2006 intelligence assessment, which has every sign of being an authentic document. They did provide us an unredacted version of that 2006 assessment, which I'm releasing today so the public can better understand how the FBI understood this threat and judge its subsequent actions or lack thereof accordingly. The redacted passages include prescient warnings for the American people. The FBI warned that, quote, white supremacist infiltration of law enforcement can result in abuses of authority and passive tolerance of racism within communities served. The FBI also cautioned that police officers who are hostile to civil rights might, quote, volunteer their professional resources to the white supremacist causes with which they sympathize. These are chilling conclusions. But rather than clearly spell out this threat for the American people, the FBI has suppressed them from public view for 14 years. For the first time, we can now see that the FBI believed internally that white supremacist infiltration of law enforcement departments was a serious problem, a source of potential abuse of power and authority on the street, and a source of potential violence against the civilian population. This summer, as the country was shocked to watch videos depicting the brutal and vindictive treatment of Black Lives Matter protesters, other videos emerged of police officers treating armed white militia as friends and as allies. In Salem, Oregon, police gave a polite warning to a group of armed white men, asking them to discreetly stay inside the buildings after curfew so it would not look like police were playing favorites when they tear gas protesters. In Albuquerque, officers were caught on a police scanner referring to white vigilantes as armed friendlies. In Kenosha, Wisconsin, officers pushed protesters towards a group of armed white civilians. Police offered water to those armed men, one of whom, shooter Kyle Rittenhouse, got away despite walking up to police with his hands in the air, the murder weapon strapped to his chest, while onlookers identified him as the killer of 2 innocent Americans. The social contract depends on fair and neutral enforcement of the laws to protect the whole citizenry against criminal violence and state violence. We must work to disentangle the police power of the state from groups and individuals that subscribe to violent white supremacist ideology and seek to inflict harm on African Americans, Asian Americans, Latinos, Jewish Americans, LGBTQ Americans, and anyone who stands in the way of race war and the civil war that the extreme right is calling for in America today. If local or state law enforcement were being infiltrated by ISIS or by Al-Qaeda or any other terrorist group, we would consider it an immediate public safety emergency. Infiltration by violent white supremacy is no less of a threat and no less urgent. To confront it effectively, we must understand it. That is the purpose of today's hearing.
That was U.S. Representative Jamie Raskin, chair of the Subcommittee on Civil Rights and Civil Liberties of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. He was speaking at the start of a hearing entitled Confronting Violent White Supremacy, Part 4, White Supremacy in Blue, the Infiltration of Local Police Departments. This is Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The Council on Criminal Justice recently hosted a webinar on public perceptions of police and protests against brutality and for accountability. The participants included Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Wesley Lowery, the Pew Research Center's John Gramlich, the Gallup Organization's Steve Crabtree, and the Council on Criminal Justice's Abby Walsh. Let's hear some of that now. The next voice you hear will be that of Wes Lowery.
You know, I've spent a lot of the last 6 or so years covering these issues in cities across the country, having these conversations. And one of the things I always find most interesting is when additional polling and research comes out about public perception around these issues, because we have a ton of conversation. And that conversation is often guided by key voices on various sides of the debate, but often it's hard to drill into what the public and the public at large wants. I know we certainly have seen some shifts over the course of the years on this. This hasn't been a static question, and what people believed in 2012, 2013, 2014 was different than perhaps what a lot of people believe today. But I'm really interested to chat with John and Steve about what the polling, what the numbers, what the research tell us about this moment, because obviously this is an extremely important moment. And we're seeing departments and the industry across the country debate how might we bring policing in line with the public's expectation of it. But in order to do that, we have to understand what the public's expectation of policing is. And so I want to start by just kind of turning to John and Steve, and starting with just a question about, you know, what are Americans' overall opinions about the police in terms of positives, in terms of negatives? How do those things break down by different demographics and groups of people? And what might we draw from what the data tells us?
Should I start?
Go ahead.
Sure. Great. Well, thank you guys for having me here. It's always a privilege to be a part of these kinds of high-level discussions. And I think you're right, Wesley, there's no more important topic than this in this election cycle or in the country right now. We have done quite a bit of polling at Gallup on perceptions of the police and social justice issues more generally, especially recently since the killing of George Floyd. But we have several trends that we've tracked for a long time, at least 20 years. And one of the notable findings this year is that for the first time, the percentage of Americans who say they have a lot or a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in the police has dipped below 50%. So it's now at 48%. Over the 20 years we've been tracking that, it's never been below 50% before. In 2017, it was up at 57%. So there's been some decline since then. But more, I think, almost as important or just as important is the fact that since 2014, perceptions of the police, confidence in the police, has diverged politically to a massive extent, right? So in 2014, I guess 2013, just prior to the events in Ferguson and New York when unarmed Black men were killed, there was a 9-point partisan difference between Republicans and Democrats in confidence in the police. And now that has, those trends have diverged, and there's now a 54% difference. So it's a massive shift. And if you look at the trends, you know, it's pretty clear that that divergence started in 2014, you know, after the events, and particularly after the events in Ferguson. So now Republicans have become much more identified with law and order issues, while Democrats have become more identified with social justice issues. And we're very much more polarized on these than we ever have been.
Yeah, I would follow up and agree with everything Steve said. First, I want to thank everyone for joining us and for the invitation to speak here on behalf of Pew. I guess what I would add to what Steve said is that we see in our polling kind of two sides of a coin when we ask about the police, general versus specific. So if you ask people overall, what do they think of the police and how the police compare with some other groups in society, the police do pretty well. The most recent time we asked about this was just before the killing of George Floyd in April. We asked Americans what they thought about police, and 78% of Americans said that they had a great deal or a fair amount of confidence. So that wasn't quite as high as the military or scientists, which are groups that typically do very well in these kinds of questions, but it was still pretty good. It was higher than the share of Americans who said that about college professors, about religious leaders, about journalists, about business leaders, and bringing up the rear, elected officials. My apologies to anyone in the audience who is an elected official or was. Similarly, when we ask people on what we call a feeling thermometer, basically something that runs from 0 to 100, where 100 is the most positive, warmest possible rating, and 0 is the most negative, coldest rating. We ask them what they think about the police, what the score is. The mean rating for police the last time we asked was 67. So about two-thirds of the way up the scale. Again, not as high as the military or teachers, but above college professors and some other groups we asked about. So when you ask in this kind of general way, the police are seen pretty positively, at least in our surveys in the last couple of years. But when you ask about police in a more specific way, looking at specific aspects of their work, it's a much more mixed story. And I think we have a slide that shows this. But the last time we asked about some more specific aspects of policing was in June, right after the killing of George Floyd. And we asked in that survey how the police are doing on four particular questions: protecting people from crime, using the right amount of force in each situation, treating racial and ethnic groups equally, and holding officers accountable for misconduct. So out of those four things, the only one on which the American public said police are doing a good job on balance was number one. On the other three, about two-thirds of the public said the police are doing only a fair or a poor job. So that gives you a sense of this kind of general versus specific dynamic that we see. And then in terms of the question about how different groups feel towards the police, Steve already mentioned the partisan divide. That is a fundamental break in views of the police, has been in recent years. Absolutely. But we also see other differences by race and by age. So typically the groups that are more positive toward police are older Americans, white Americans, those who identify as Republican or independents who lean that way, and the groups that are less positive toward police are pretty much the opposite of younger Americans, members of racial or ethnic minority groups, and those who identify as Democrats or lean Democrats.
You know, John, looking at those slides, something that was interesting to me was on the previous one, it looked like the lowest grades or the lowest ranks in terms of belief the police were doing a good job. I don't want to misstate the poll language, so I'm glad it's back, right? But the percent, I was looking at these two on the right, right? Treating racial and ethnic groups equally and holding officers accountable when misconduct occurs, right? And those look like they're not that far off, I guess, from using the right amount of force in each situation, but they're the lowest marks of this set of questions, right? And so I just wanted to highlight that because in terms of gauging what are some of the pressure points where perhaps there's some of the deepest distrust or skepticism, it looks like that. That's what the polling is showing. These are some of the areas in terms of accountability, treating racial and ethnic groups equally, and then using the right amount of force when force is being applied. I wanted to follow up with you two both. You both touched on it, but can we drill in for a second on how perceptions and trust of police vary along racial and ethnic groups? Obviously, that is one of the main public conversations we're having. And also, while we do know that we are in like a remarkably polarized environment currently, with Republicans and Democrats and liberals and conservatives, we also know that race is one of these kind of chief differentiating factors when it comes to how this is polling. And so I just wanted to make sure we underscored that part of it. What does the data tell us about how race shows up?
Well, I can address that. We have a few questions that we asked for the first time this year in the wake of the George Floyd incidents and all the protests that followed. We asked a question about one of the things we wanted to gauge was people's everyday interactions with the police and were those positive or negative? Because I think, you know, in terms of police relations with the community, that's what everybody's sort of focused on right now, how to improve those day-to-day interactions and ensure that, you know, relations are good and violence doesn't occur. So we asked, if you had an interaction with police in your area, how confident are you that they would treat you with courtesy and respect? And among all Americans, just 15% said not too confident or not at all confident. But among Black Americans, that goes up to 39%. So about 4 in 10 Black Americans not confident that they'd be treated with respect. Among white Americans, it's 1 in 10, about 9%. So a big racial gap there. We see a lot of other racial gaps in terms of questions about interactions with the police. We asked one question about thinking about interactions that you may have had with the police over the past 12 months. Were they positive overall, negative? 75% of Americans say positive overall. This was just people who had interactions with police. But that number drops to 59% among Black Americans and rises to 79% among white Americans. So again, you get that 4 in 10 among Black Americans who have a negative impression of the police based on their encounters.
And so again, in a lot of ways, that's almost, it's the inverse, it's reversed in those numbers, that the majority of Black Americans are saying they believe based on their encounters, they have negative perception or relation with the police. And white Americans are flipped.
Yeah, much lower.
4 in 10. Yeah, yes, 40%. Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, and I can piggyback on that in terms of how people see the police treating racial and ethnic minority groups. Obviously, you saw that earlier slide about around 2/3 of Americans not giving the police especially high marks on that front. That was a survey from a couple of months back, and we actually just released a new survey yesterday that has new data out, but the story hasn't changed at all. In that survey, we found that 2/3 of Americans say Black people are generally treated less fairly than white people when dealing with the police. So exactly the same number as June, right in the aftermath of the George Floyd killing. And there are huge racial and ethnic differences in these views. Yesterday's survey found that 91% of Black Americans say Black people are generally treated less fairly than white people by the police. There were much smaller shares of Hispanic and Asian and white Americans who said that. But one thing I would like to point out, which I think is notable, is that it's still a majority view across all four major racial and ethnic groups. So you had 91% of Black Americans saying that, but so did 71% of Hispanic Americans, 71% of Asian Americans. These are English-speaking Asian Americans only that we surveyed, and 58% of white Americans. So to me, that's pretty notable that this is a majority view. And if you might think that this is the majority view only very recently, maybe because of this summer's events, that's actually not the case. We asked the same question a very similar question, I should say, in early 2019, before the George Floyd event incident and the events of this year. And back then, 84% of Black people and 63% of white adults also said that Black people are treated less fairly by the police than white people. So in other words, this has been the majority view across racial and ethnic groups for quite a long time now, even if there are still big differences.
Now, what can the polling and the research tell us about some of these conversations that we are now having, right? That I think a lot of what we talked about speaks to where the conversation was in 2013, 2014, 2015, right? This debate over whether or not there was disparate treatment, whether or not accountability might happen. It seems like those positions are relatively baked in, and now we're having new and additional conversations, conversations about things like defunding or divesting or abolishing even, right? Is there polling, is there information that tells us where the public is now on some of these questions about tactic and reform and things that might change in policing? And if we know where things are now, is there a trend line at all? You know, have those things changed at all from even where we were 3 or 4 or 5 years ago?
I can answer that. We asked a question gauging public support for several proposed policing reforms in the wake of the George Floyd incident. And, you know, they kind of divide into three sets. One set is pretty much uncontroversial among all groups. And those are things that include, as you mentioned, Wesley, you know, changing management practices to hold police more accountable for their actions. We have a kind of a vague item that said requiring officers to have good relations with the community. Those things are all things that pretty much everybody agrees should happen, right? So over 95% of all Americans with, you know, I think over 95% across partisan lines. Then there's one that doesn't get much support among any group, which is abolishing police departments altogether. So, you know, a lot of most Americans, 15% of Americans say they strongly or somewhat support that, 27% of Democrats and 1% of Republicans. So not that much, not that much support among any group. But then there's a middle set of proposed policy changes where there are wide partisan divides. And so you have a lot of sort of ambivalence among the American public. And a lot depends on the wording we use to ask the question. So we get a pretty high level of support for promoting community-based alternatives such as violence intervention, 82% overall, but significantly lower among Republicans than Democrats. Almost all Democrats support that. Some of the more controversial items are ending stop and frisk, which is far more likely to be supported by Democrats than Republicans, as is eliminating police unions, eliminating officer enforcement of nonviolent crimes. And then the one that most closely corresponds to defunding the police, I think, is this one that's next to the last on the bottom, which is reducing the budgets of police departments and shifting the money to social programs. So this is where we see the biggest partisan divide of all, in that just 5% of Republicans say they support this idea versus 78% of Democrats, which is a massive gulf. So it really just depends on which group you're talking to. And that's why you see about half of Americans, 47% overall, support the idea. And then that number is similar among political independents.
That was journalist Wesley Lowery, Pew Research Center's John Gramlich, and Gallup Organization's Steve Crabtree. They were participating in a Council on Criminal Justice webinar on public perceptions of police and protests against brutality and for accountability. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. I'm Doug McVeigh, and you have been listening to Prison Pipeline. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You'll also find a link there to subscribe to the Prison Pipeline podcast. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give the page a like and share it with friends. Many thanks to our engineer, and a heartfelt thanks to you, dear listener, for joining us. You make it all worth it. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
Sometimes I find myself so long. Alone, regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I'm just a soul. I try so hard, so please don't let me be.